It is the story of you. Expand your consciousness to take in the sun, the moon, the planets, the earth, everyone. And when your limited consciousness focuses upon one thing, you say, ah, there is the sun. And in a few hours, I will see the moon. And in a few hours, you do see the moon. You are the creator, but you only create to the lower realms of the mind. Everything is within you, the sun, the moon, the planets, all of the people functioning through all of their different states of consciousness, all of the various manifestations of form, they are all within you. Isn't that fun? So now, just before I came on Inner Search, Rudy sent me a thing about the study of multiverses in science. So they've gotten deep into the quantum mechanics, and they found out that there's not just a single dimension, a single universe, there's multiple dimensions, multiple universes, possibly infinite universes. And so then I reached out to Pandit Sabharatnam in Chennai. He knows everything about the Vedas and Agamas and all these philosophies. I said, anything in our old scriptures about multiverses? So he writes back to me just, I think, the day we left Kauai. The cosmology of Saiva Siddhanta, Swami, is centered on the concept of multiverses. Each tattva is holding within itself hundreds and hundreds of universes. In the Prithvi tattva, there are thousands of andas or brahmandas, each one consisting of 108 worlds. In the Jala tattva universe, there are 8 worlds. Similarly, each succeeding tattva gets extended 10 times up to the Prakriti tattva. The universes above that are 100 times higher, 100 times larger than those of the lower tattvas. And the universes in the Shuddha, Vidya, Ishvara, and Sadasiva tattvas are 1,000 times larger than that. And those in the Shakti tattva and Shiva tattva are 100,000 times larger than that. There are many Vedic mantras which speak of the existence of thousands and thousands and thousands of universes. Isn't that interesting? So we knew that a long time ago, and now science is just creeping up on that knowledge now, and they're looking around and they don't know what to think about all of it. So part of the message today is that you are the whole thing. Isn't that wonderful to know? And part of the message from this is that it is wonderful to get curious about your meditations. And if you find them getting kind of routine and boring and not very interesting, then amp up the curiosity about some aspect of it and get your mind, I really want to know something. And then go into that and then meditate on it and then explore it. Maybe like I did, I went out and asked some Harvard expert, and then I went back inside myself and said, what does that mean? And then I went back to them and back inside myself, and it was fascinating. It still is fascinating. I mean, I'm just charmed by this whole Siva dance that's going on inside of my cells. Oh, one more cellular fact. Get this one. No one told you this in cellular biology, I bet. So these little mitochondria guys, they're not human. They're not human. The mitochondria are absolutely fundamental to the energy system inside every cell of your body. They are the battery, the little thing that creates energy on which everything else depends in a cell. And they are not human. They don't have human DNA. They are another species of creature. I know. What I learned this, I got I went to Dora and I said, Dora, is this true? And she wrote back and she says, it's true. I said, wait a minute. So if they're not human, how do they get inside every single cell in my body? Every cell, 100 trillion, has mitochondria in it. Every single, it has to for the energy. I said, how is it that they're inside? I mean, they have to be human so that they replicate inside the cell as part of, like, just like everything else. And she says, no. I said, well, then how do they get in there? So she says, well, it seems that when the cell first begins to divide, the very first cellular division, this other species, mitochondria, are waiting and get inside the cell before it closes off and get inside both cells. Then when the next cellular division divides, mitochondria make sure that they're in both of those cells. Now they're in all four cells. And this other species of being, non-human, replicates itself and it waits for these opportune moments to find their way into your cell. And you couldn't have life, and no plant could have life, and no fish could have life without mitochondria. And so they have migrated into every living thing. Is that mind-boggling? They're mitochondria. Yeah, they're a totally other thing. I mean, I don't know what to call them. They're a multicellular Krebs cycle battery, you know. wild. And we give them a place to live and thrive. So it's a symbiotic relationship. But when I found out that my whole energy thing is based on a non-human species living inside of me, I was like, whoa. that was interesting. They're definitely aliens, I'm sure of it.
Are they outside of cells?
No, they're inside the cellular wall. Only inside.
But before they're inside, where were they? I mean, where?
Yeah. Yeah. It seems that they're waiting in the uterus. Well, they're in every cell of your body.
Yes,
so they seem to be opportunistic enough and intelligent enough to know that they have to be there at that critical moment of the first cellular division. And once they're there, then they have their own DNA to replicate themselves. So once one of them's in a cell, they replicate with their own DNA, non-human DNA, make more copies. Then when that cell divides, they're there to say, okay, you go with that side, I'll go with this side. You know, I don't know about the meetings that they're holding, but.
Are they in anything else out there?
Everything.
Every living cell, a tree, a flower,
animal,
everything, every living creature. What if they made a mistake, let's say, and one of them was napping when it should have been ready to go in? Probably that might be a form of miscarriage. So basically, that would be a failed division, and it wouldn't develop into a creature, a human. Send that to me, definitely. we're communicating about a plant consciousness. That's next InterSearch plant consciousness class. It's going to be great. But he's sharing with me some wonderful things. In fact, I have for all of you, I brought some resources on this that are a little more technical. If you were interested in one part of it or another, that you could explore it on your own. And can the sadhakas, can you and Shivaratna maybe pass those out to everyone? It's a lot of kind of heavy intellectual reading, but behind it is this fascinating truth about your being, your life, you know, the things that are creating your life. It's quite marvelous, actually.
Even Einstein had difficulty in understanding these two particles communicating. Spooky connection at a distance.
Yeah, God doesn't play with dice.
So the most basic level consciousness is energy?
Yes, exactly. So she's summarizing for us at the most basic level, consciousness is energy, pure energy. Right.
Just a light sentence as a reminder about the story of
Guru Deva. Oh, okay. Yesterday at lunch, she asked me, she said, all these stories of Guru Deva, do you have any stories of Guru Deva when he was young? So I asked her to ask today, and she just asked. So while they're passing those out, I'll tell you one or two little stories to rest your brain after all of that. So you all know that Gurudeva was orphaned early in his life. For those who don't know, his mother passed away when he was 9, and his father was killed in an automobile accident when he was 11. So his father was raising him when he was a child, before he was a teenager, and his father was apparently a little bit depressed by the loss of his wife, and he expressed that depression on a couple of occasions by taking off his belt and thrashing his son, which was Gurudeva. And that was not a happy moment in this young boy's life, to be punished in that terrible way by his father. So two things came out of that. One was when his father died, Gurudeva didn't go to his funeral. He refused to attend his father's funeral because he'd beaten him. And then the other thing that came out of it was Gurudeva in later life, as you all know, got deeply involved in positive discipline, not hitting our children. And he found out that even among his membership, we were slapping, we were pinching, we were whomping on our kids. And he just said, no, that's not going to happen in my fellowship. We have to stop that. And then he had the fathers and mothers who had done that do certain penance, prayaschittas, for doing that, and made them promise him they would never, ever touch that child again. We can discipline a child. There's lots of ways to discipline a child without hitting them, slapping them, pinching them, well, all of that. So that all came from the belt, his father's belt. That's a small story. Then one more, and then we probably should close. You're still handing out all the other ones? No, that's not the one that I was talking about. There's a big box of them. No? It's a cardboard box of, I mean, like a 12 inches square, and it's got hundreds and hundreds of... It's not. They took it away. Okay, well, we'll get it back for you. This is obviously not it. This is the secrets of meditation. So what we'll do, we'll find the box, and we'll get these papers into your hands. Is it of interest? Maybe it's not important. Okay. Okay, we will do it then. Louder. You can. You certainly can. You must. So, last story. When Gurudeva was studying with one of his catalysts, after he was orphaned, then he was given to a family-related member to be raised in California. And he was being raised, and he was being trained consciously. She was a woman who had been lived in the Mysore Palace for some years, and so she was able to teach him some cultural things. She was the first one to teach him to do the dancing and how to do a turban and all of those things. But she found out early on that he didn't like criticism, unlike all of you. Who say, bring it on. He didn't do well with criticisms. He was about, at this point, he was about 13 years old, I think. And so she tried to correct him, but that didn't work very well. So she developed a very clever system. If she had a correction, you know, you really should make your bed every day when you get up in the morning. If she had that correction to make, she would write it on a piece of paper, and she would poke it between two rocks in a little rock fireplace that they had. And then he knew if he saw a note in the fireplace that was a message, and that he would go and and receive it and hear the correction in this neutral way. You know, it came without emotion and without encountering your corrector, and he liked that, and he responded really well to that form of correction. So as a result of that experience as a youth, when he developed the mechanics of management and administration in the monastery, he created the OTM, we call it. So that's the one-third majority is the name. OTM is the anagram. And he developed a system where senior swamis would meet once every week. And if you had a correction for me, I mean, you saw something that I should do better, you know, your robes are always so wrinkled. And, you know, it would really be nice if you represented the order a little better, Swami. But you would never tell me that directly. You write a note to the OTM. The OTM gathers all of the observations and corrections that other monks have and takes it to Bodhinava. And then Bodhinava sits there and says, oh, that's silly. No, he doesn't need to. Oh, yeah, he should hear that message. And then he sends one of the senior monks to that monk. And the senior monk puts his hands together. He said, I'm bringing you a message from the OTM, and please forgive me. Always says, you know, please forgive me for giving you this message, but Bodhinava and the monks think you could have less wrinkles in your robes. And then I say, okay. And I thank him for correcting me. And so we have this very soft, non-critical exchange about something that I should fix in my life. And that all came, that he strategized that, I believe. He didn't tell me this, but he strategized all that because as a young man, he was taught to get notes for things that he should change in his life. So interesting, huh? That's a story I don't think has ever been told.